Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
This is the very thing that I feel I am most sort of amazed that I accomplished, is that I went from being in the art world, be considered an emerging artist, you know, young, and I dropped out for 9 years. And the idea of getting back into that when I didn't have my friends and connections anymore, the fact that I did that is the most remarkable thing to me. And it's because I really decided to do it.
I am delighted to welcome Judith Braun to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Judith was born in 1947 in Albany, New York, and received her MA and MFA from the University of Albany in 1983. She began showing in New York City in 1988, in Group Materials, Democracy Show at DIA, followed by White Columns, Art in General, the Drawing Center, and the 1994 Bad Girls Show at the New Museum. After moving to live in New York City, she had solo shows at Su Yun Yi, Arena, Fruit and Flower Deli, Joe Scheftel, Mackenzie Fine Art, and Simuvac Projects. Judith has also participated in many, many group shows nationally and internationally, including locations such as Berlin, Rio de Janeiro, London, Vienna, among others. Museum shows include the Indianapolis Museum of Art, the Chrysler Museum of Art, Grand Rapids Art Museum, and more. And Judith has received artist grants from the Pollock Krasner Foundation, the Adolf and Esther Gottlieb Foundation, among others. Reviews of her work have been in New York Times, Hyperallergic, Flash Art, Frieze, and most recently, the Brooklyn Rail reviewed her solo show at Opelka Gallery in Albany, New York. Judith's papers are archived in the Special Collection of Downtown New York Artists of the 1980s to 90s and the Fales Library at NYU. And in 2018, Judith returned to live and work in Albany, New York, where her grandchildren are located. And we know Judith because she was the juror who did such a fantastic job during this year's 2022 Painting at Night exhibition for the Artist Mother community. Today, we're going to talk about Judith's life, her work, her story. There'll be a follow-up interview where Judith gets to share a little bit about her process jurying, but I am delighted to introduce all of you to Judith today and hear her talk about her work and her life. Judith, welcome to the Artist Mother podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So I've had just such a pleasure getting to know you, Judith, as you juried the show. Can't wait for everyone else to get to hear some of your journey, hear from you, and just, you know, be inspired by the spark that you bring to conversation. Can you start off by telling us something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today? I'm wondering if arts was a part of your childhood, if you've always wanted to be an artist, kind of what's the thread that's connecting you?
Well, I wish I could say it was an easy fit. I really wasn't brought up around an art community. We didn't go to museums and my parents were not artists or art literate, really. But somehow or other, I think that, well, my sister liked to draw and she became an artist and I used to draw a lot. So there must have been an environment that was accepting of that or even encouraging of it, but without us knowing that there was, you know, an art world out there or anything to pursue for yourself.
Right.
But sometimes I think that, it's sort of subtle. Like my father was a carpenter, so making things by hand. He also was an engineer, so he had drafting tables with lights and paper and pencils. And so there's something, you know, that you can just kind of pick up from your environment.
But
it's not, you know, like a neat story that I could say, oh, well, you know, my father, you know.
And you grew up in Albany, right?
Yep, I grew up in Albany, New York. It's really, well, it's the capital of New York State, so it's sort of a government town.
Right.
But, I don't know, speaking of my family, they loved taking us to New York City. That was something that, whatever their reasons were, they thought it was interesting. They thought that we would see all kinds of people. So that was an exciting outing. And maybe that's part of what drew me to New York itself.
Maybe.
To, you know, creative energy town.
Yeah.
It's
funny. I was actually going to say that, you know, I'm from Western New York. I grew up outside of Rochester and Buffalo. And I feel like when you're not from New York State and you say that you're from New York, everyone assumes that you mean New York City. But like, I feel like I grew up more removed from New York City culture than anybody from the Midwest or, you know, like just because.
Especially like that. I think 5 miles outside of New York City.
Yeah.
It's a complete, even 1 mile.
I know. Like,
it's either New York City or you're not in New York City.
Right.
They're
it's
not
very
like
interesting.
The same. Right now, I'd say, though, that New York State, I live upstate now in Albany, like I said, which is 2.5 hours north of the city. And the Hudson Valley from the city up to where I am is very, very busy with the art world right
yes.
now. There are just so many. There always were a few museums and art centers, but it's really, you know, kind of burgeoning with the energy now, because maybe the pandemic started that, but you know, it's sort of an energy that's really keeping up. So now I would say that there's art world, New York art world energy up along the Hudson Valley.
Yeah, but still, that's very exciting.
There's still nothing the same as being
right.
in New York City. It doesn't matter that I'm just two hours away or you're an hour away. People who say, oh, I moved, I'm just an hour out of New York. I'm like, you're not going to go to New York anymore than
right.
I do.
Right.
You know, getting into the city and out of the city is where
it's
all
a beast.
The work takes.
Yep.
So you don't
for
think
sure.
I lived in New York. I never left.
Right.
Unless I was going for an art show. You don't just casually like go away. I don't know. I guess some people do go away.
I totally understand what you mean, though. I mean, it takes a lot of work to get in and out. Judith, I'm going to have you jump back to tell us a little bit more about your trajectory as an artist mom. But first, just so people have context of your work as you're talking about your journey, could you describe kind of what your art looks like and a little bit about the mediums that you work with? Maybe tell us a little bit about your process.
Sure. So obviously, because I am 74 now, I have done a lot of different kinds of work over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say I started as a realistic figurative painter, but, you know, I've been through a lot of stages. And so currently, I would say that my work is recognizable by being black and white. My palette mm-hmm. is black and white, symmetry, and abstraction. And those are actually sort of rules, parameters that I work in for the last maybe 20 years almost. So whether it's drawings or I do wall drawings or if I'm doing paintings, which is my current work is paintings, I'm working with a limited palette of black and white. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes I throw in some fluorescent colors because they're also a very limited palette of like mm-hmm. 5 colors.
Right.
But the symmetry and the abstraction are like key to like what the form is going to look like. I just wrote a statement recently. You know, I've written hundreds of statements.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, I got this idea that these rules are both a trigger and a filter for my imagination. Mm-hmm. So that's how it works. Like I can put anything into that format of like symmetry, black and white, and abstraction. And whether it's about, you know, flowers or faces or you know, buildings or feelings, once I put it through that, you know, it starts to take on its own form, but I think they're recognizable. Certainly, I've done a lot of fingerprint work.
Yeah.
So I did that for over the last 10 years or so. Charcoal on my fingers, drawing on the wall with fingerprints. So yeah, if you see one of those, it's not going to be somebody else.
Yeah.
Most likely, because I don't really know anybody else that's tried to copy me doing it, and I didn't get it from anybody. So those are mine.
Judith, tell me a little bit more about just the journey that you've been on. You know, you said that you're in your 70s. Now you were in New York. The beginning of your career was in the 80s, and you were in New York City as a working artist at that time. Can you kind of bring us back sort of to the beginning, like, of your journey as an artist, and talk about maybe some of those transitions or some of the stages that you've gone through?
Right. Well, I'll just make a little correction on that. So like in the 80s, I did my graduate degree in Albany.
Okay.
So I was in Albany when I did that. And so That was 83, I finished my graduate, my MFA here. And then I had, at the time, you didn't have gallery shows while you were in MFA. You know, like now you can maybe, if you're in a program, you might have a gallery come through and pick you up. But at the time, I had a 5-year goal that after graduating, I would show in New York. Mm. So I was living in Albany, but I wanted to show in New York. That was my idea of the art world and the art world that I wanted to be part of. And so in 88, I had my first show in New York. So I did that from living in Albany, though.
You completed your goal.
Yeah. But it's an interesting thing I've thought of recently, that like Albany is like, it's minuscule next to the art world of New York City. But I thought back and I thought, you know, I started my New York art career from Albany.
Mm-hmm.
Not like after I moved there, then I finally got a show in New York. It didn't work that way.
Interesting.
It's an important point for me to remember, you know, that I actually started from Albany. I launched myself into New York City. I had a show in what was then the East Village was having a little heyday. And I got a show there. And that did, you know, one thing led to another from that. So that was very good. But part of the story for me has not been a straight line. Hmm. You know, at a certain point, like it was 93, 94, I decided to move to the city. You know, we're jumping way into my life here because at that point, my daughter was already graduating high school. So She was going to go to NYU and I was going to move to New York. I was married, but then my marriage broke up. Mm. And I ended up moving to the city without my husband, so I didn't have my financial support. So I got to the city and I had a co-op with a mortgage. And, You know, my daughter going into college and I didn't have a job. I was just like an artist, you know.
Wow.
And
how old were you?
I was 47.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I had already let me get this straight. Sometimes it's hard to get the chronology of everything straight.
Yeah.
But I went to New York and I thought that I would have to take a little break from making my work because I didn't have an income flow.
Right.
And my daughter was in college, but I still had this mortgage and stuff. So, you know, I thought it would just be a year or something before I got myself going.
Right.
Because I had been showing. See, that's the thing. I had started showing in New York, but now I was in New York and didn't have any money.
Right.
So I said, I'll take a little break. And the break ended up being 9 years.
Wow.
So it can happen because now I'm back. And I have returned and now I'm, you know, 20 years into being back.
Right.
So I had a 9-year break when I didn't keep up with my art friends and nobody kept up with me. I just the art world doesn't wait for you. Mm-hmm. If you get off the wagon, you know, it just keeps going without you. Nobody was waiting for me or holding right. a spot or anything. So,
but yet you were also able to return and jump back in the stream.
Yeah, that's a very, you had, you know, said you might ask a question about something I might be proud of. You know, sometimes that we're like, we think, oh, how did I do that?
Or yeah.
how did I? And this is the very thing that I feel I am most like sort of amazed that I accomplished.
Tell me.
That I went from being in the art world, be considered an emerging artist, you know, young, da 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 da. And I dropped out for 9 years. And the idea of getting back into that when I had, you know, didn't have my friends and connections anymore. The fact that I did that is the most remarkable thing to me.
Yeah.
And it's because I really decided to do it.
Yep.
This is where the tarot comes in. I'm not going to say hook your life on, you know, read the tarot cards. They're not fortune telling, but they can make you make decisions if you're asking a question. Like, mm-hmm. so I asked, you know, what's wrong with my life? And the answer was, you know, there's this imbalance in my life. It's all work and no art anymore. It was just pay the bills and not be an artist anymore. And that imbalance had to be addressed. And that's what I wanted to know. And when I knew that it had to be addressed, I thought, well, if I ask myself, what's the problem? And I told myself what the problem was via the cards.
Right.
I better listen.
Right.
So I turned my whole life around. I moved into the studio and started renting out the rest of my house that I had. So I was taking in money from tenants instead of having a job.
Wow.
So therefore, I put myself back in the studio and I lived in my studio for 25 years.
Oh, okay? My.
With my clothes, with my hot plate, you know, with my studio, with my office, with my storage in the studio. And that's how, and I decided to make all new work. And I went out and I said, I'm just going to get one more show. If I could just show one more time, because mm-hmm. it was so much fun to be an artist. And I gave myself 3 years to make new work and get the ball rolling again. And within a year, I had new work and I was going out to make people look at it and do that desperate feeling of like, will you look at my work?
Right. And,
but I found the right person. He liked the work and he hadn't known me before. And he just went for it. And he took me on and started working with me. And if I trace back now, the next 20 years after that, not that he did anything after that. He didn't go around pulling strings. It's not mm-hmm. like that. But somebody believes in you and therefore someone else does. So then yeah. I shared with him and then so-and-so came in and saw the, and then they thought, oh, well, he liked you. So let me look at you more seriously. So it is kind of a chain reaction that way.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that I could sit back and do nothing. I'm still doing it.
Right.
Much, you
yeah,
know,
you're a busy bee.
Daily trying to work on it.
But I think too, Judith, like that's such an important point about how, you know, it doesn't take hundreds of people, but, you know, that one can like really have a ripple effect and affect your career. But even before that one was you believing in yourself, you know,
well, it's true because it's that I had to go out the door. The day that I met that guy, I didn't want to go out mm-hmm. asking people to look at my new work.
Right.
I don't like doing that.
Yep.
But at the time, what we did was carried around a CD, mm-hmm. you know, from slides to CDs, you know, now
right.
it's all on the computer. But at the time, it was just like you make a CD and you put your bunch of images on it. You know, I went in the gap. I went around to the neighborhood, to the Lower East Side was the new scene. And, I did. So that's what it was. It mm-hmm. was going out the door that day against all my, you know, wishes.
Right.
And going in this space and striking up a conversation just enough so that the guy inquired further. Oh, what do you do? Let me see your work. And I happened to have the CD. I pulled the CD out. And like within an hour, he was like in my studio looking at the work.
Wow.
It doesn't always, it's not like, oh, that's what always happens.
Right.
But it is that, that against the grain, nobody likes going out looking for shows and writing all the letters and all that stuff. But I have, I guess I always have to just remember that if you don't do that, scratch, nobody's coming knocking on your door. You got to do something that just gets the ball rolling.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. I'm so pleased to share that this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast is sponsored by Annie's Kit Clubs. Annie's Kit Clubs brings craft and art supplies right to your doorstep. From woodworking to beading, knitting to card making, crochet, quilting, and more, you can join a kit club, and ready-to-go craft kits are mailed straight to your home on a regular basis. No prep work required. Such a fun and easy way to learn a new technique or gain inspiration by folks at Annie's who make it easy for you to try your hand at a new medium. Annie's Kit Clubs come packaged with materials and instructions for each project, so once it hits your doorstep, you can jump right in. I love this. Use promo code ARTISTMOTHER75 to take 75% off your first month of a kit subscription. Find out more at annieskitclubs.com. These kits would be a super fun way to get your kiddos involved in art and crafting without the burden of them going through all of your studio materials or making a mess with your stuff. Try out the Simply Beads kit to learn the art of jewelry making, knit your own socks with the Love to Knit kit, learn the art of crochet and create unique Afghan squares with the Afghan Block of the Month Club or their Moroccan Tile Crochet Club. That sounds very fancy. There's even a Young Woodworkers Kit Club, which would be so fun for kids, and a Charm Pack Club, which brings you 42-piece charm packs from America's top fabric designers. So once again, to get inspiration and supplies straight to your door, check out Annie's Kit Clubs and use promo code ARTISTMOTHER75 to take 75%, thank you Annie's, off your first month of a kit subscription. Find out more at annieskitclubs.com. That's AnnieskitClubs.com. Thank you so much, Annie's Kit Clubs, for supporting and sponsoring the Artist Mother Podcast. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about like your art and the work you're making now in a minute. I first just want you to bring me back one more time to sort of those earlier stages in your art career and maybe talk to me about the intersection of art and motherhood for you. There's so many artists that listen to this podcast that have young kids, and a lot of them find their creative energy sort of in the midst of, you know, time that they have, like when their kids are taking a nap or painting at night, or, you know, there's sort of this struggle of like holding, you know, the candle of your artist life in one hand, and then this daunting motherhood, parenthood, you know, in the other. And for you, just like hearing how you kind of, your daughter was going to college and you kind of took off to New York and you were like, I'm going to really try here and figure this out. I'm just curious a little bit about like what your life was like before that. Like, were you doing art, you know, while your daughter was younger? Like, kind of tell me a little bit about that chapter.
Right. Well, it was quite a chapter. So my daughter was conceived and born in the midst of a sort of abusive, not sort of, an abusive marriage. So, I was married, and my husband was abusive, and but I was like very, you know, attached and hoping, you know, over the first year or so that I had never experienced anything like that. I didn't grow up around it. I mm-hmm. really just thought, oh, this can't go on, you know. And then when we wanted to have a baby, and I thought for sure that it would stop.
Right.
And so I went ahead and I got pregnant. Now, this story is a lot, you know, I'm going to skim over the top of it to the important part, I guess. And so what happened is that as I knew I was pregnant right away after we, you know, tried to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And something clicked in me that I couldn't wait to see if he was going to continue being violent. Because the mother in me immediately knew I had to leave.
Hmm.
And leave actually is never the right word. It's escape.
Yeah.
So I was living in Canada, in Montreal, with this man. And I planned an escape. And it was literally, you know, an escape. It's hard to kind of make it a short story. But anyway, I escaped from him. And I came back to Albany, where my parents were. And I didn't really tell them what was going on exactly. I just said I was afraid of him or whatever, and I ran away. But of course, he was on my heels.
Mm.
And so over the next few months, while I was, you know, being pregnant, we went for counseling, and he was never going to do it again and whatever. So we moved in together. And at 7 months pregnant, I had a very bad, abusive time. So I wish I could say that I just ran away then and that was the end of it, but mm-hmm. actually it's not as easy as that. You mm-hmm. run away, and then somehow or other you're talked back into, because, you know, you're pregnant and you right. were in love with this guy and you had this vision that you were going to have a baby together, and you know. So it's like I was talked back into it a couple of times, but somehow or other, at the very last time when I left, I ran away. I knew that if I got away alive, somehow I felt then, because I was then, you know, getting big, and I thought, I'll never go back.
Mm-hmm.
So I did run away. But even to this very minute, I don't know where he is that he could sort of come back and get me.
Mm.
But I didn't let my daughter see him. He gave her up for adoption because I met somebody else who was very nice, and, you know, she was 2 years old, and he asked, you know, we had this kind of agreement that he would give her up for adoption, and therefore he would never have to give me any money. Anyway, that's all aside from my art, but it's like, I wasn't really thinking about art exactly during that time. I was just trying to kind of get through this episode and not be, you just live in fear. Like, that's that feeling that someone's going to come and get you any day, any behind you on the street, you know, around a corner, getting out of the car.
Judith, can I just say thank you so much?
I'm laughing. It's not funny, but it's been, you know, I mean, my daughter's 46 now, so this is 46 years ago.
No, but I know folks who are in your situation. I know women listening. I have friends in the artist mother community who have gone through very similar stories. And I know there are other women out there who maybe are going through the same thing, but have yet to have that moment of clarity and realize that that is them. And just, I know it takes a lot to talk about your story and abuse in such a public way. And I just want to say thank you for sharing.
And I hope, you know, I don't want to hope anybody's out there going through this, but I hope if anyone is, I guess the idea is that it is very, very hard to leave. It is very, very, very hard to leave. I don't know how I got the strength to actually do it. But I think it's that motherhood feeling. Like, yeah. I did not do that to protect myself. He had been beating me up for close to 2 years, and I hadn't run away. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I knew I was a mother, I totally knew I had to protect my baby.
Yeah.
So I did, you know, I ran away. So, you know, it, okay, so then.
So then you were a single mom.
Right. And I had to figure out what the heck I was going to do with my life, you know. I didn't have anybody really. I was on public assistance for a while. I got myself an apartment. I had bars on the windows. And then I started thinking like, oh, well, maybe I'll teach art, because I thought that I was sort of an art. That's what I sort of was. And mm-hmm. not in any professional way, but I had an artistic. I had been making crafts. Mm-hmm. I had been doing crochet. I had been even teaching, you know, needlework and woodworking. I was a maker of things.
Right.
So art seemed to be probably, now I had gone to FIT actually when I got out of high school. So I had been for figure drawing. So okay. I knew how to draw the figure. Now that was like who you would think, well, it would seem normal. Oh yeah, be an art teacher or something like that. But I only had a 2 years of degree when my daughter was born from FIT. It was just 2 years. So I thought, well, let me go back to school and get a bachelor's degree. So I went to a school without walls called Empire State College, and you design your own degree program, because I had a kid, you know, I couldn't just go off to college. So the degree program became basically about doing art things. So I did a mural in the daycare center.
Okay.
And I did another mural at an apartment building next door to me. So I started to develop this thing around art, mm-hmm. but it needed a job. So I thought, oh, I should teach, you know, high mm-hmm. school or something like that. I couldn't think of myself as just an artist until, I'm not going to say it's because I met somebody, but I met this guy who had a job, and he also was divorced, and he had three grown children, and are not grown. They were middle school kids.
Okay.
They're grown compared to my two-year-old.
Right.
He was also a writer. He had a job, but he has a writer, and he encouraged me to go to graduate school because he had a job and he could help me pay for it. So, you know, it's funny how, you know, people can come along. I don't like to think that women can't do it on their own. You know, it's just very, very hard. And so that's what helped me. You know, I had mm-hmm. a two-year-old. I met this guy. He was very supportive, and he encouraged me. So I applied to the graduate school here, the MFA program in Albany, and I got in. And I went to start. That's where I became an artist.
Right.
Before that, it was just like this idea, like, oh, murals in the daycare center, you know, little odd things. But what was art about for me, and what did I want from it in my life? That happened in graduate school. Hmm. So, because all of a sudden, you know, everybody that's going to graduate school knows this. It doesn't matter about the money. I don't like that we had to pay so much for it. Mm-hmm. But the environment is that, like a little place to suddenly be very serious. Everybody's serious about art. And we started having reading groups. We were reading art theory and reading, you know, biographies and going to New York every month and seeing every show before the computer, okay?
Yep. How old was your daughter when you went to grad school?
She was two and a half.
Love that.
So I had her in a daycare center 3 days a week for half a day. My mother took her on Thursdays, I think it was. And then I started, it was like I would bring her to my critiques.
Yep.
And make her sit in the back. And I started having a studio then, you know, so then you bring your kid to the studio and you set mm-hmm. up a table in the corner. I don't have pictures of it the way everybody has now, but it was just because we didn't have digital cameras. So I didn't have pictures of her every minute playing in the corner.
Yep.
I did a painting with my daughter as a model. And she was it wasn't really to be about her, but I needed a figure and I had her pose and I had a TV on it behind me so that she was just looking over my shoulder watching the TV and I was painting. And that's just the way it was. And
I love it. I love like this, you know, the slight tweaks of like technology, but like the scenarios are still the same, right? Still
this is the way it was. I had I didn't know what else to do. I used to take her for a ride in the car. When she was even a baby, before, you know, when they're still napping in the car, mm-hmm. I'd take her for a ride and hope, you know, ride around till she would fall asleep.
Yep.
And then I would get out of the car and sit on the, like next to the car, like on a country road.
Right.
And pick out my pad with my pastels and I was drawing trees. That's what I was just drawing. That was the only thing I could think of to draw that, like, I could just get her to sleep and.
Amazing.
That's how it was. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, people, and I didn't know, I don't know, once I got in graduate school and it was serious, then I had to be, you know, she was starting to get older. So then she was in full-time school.
Mm-hmm.
So then she would take the bus from the school to the corner and come to my studio at 3 o'clock and sit, you know. And then I would work until 5 or 5:30 and then we'd go home.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it was, you know, until then she went, I started to show, you know, to get older and I only had one. Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. My husband had 3 kids. So yes, we had his kids. They were having things not with their mom, not getting along with their mom. And they'd come and mm-hmm. live with us on and off, all 3 of them at different times. But, you know, they were getting to be teenagers. So
right.
I was like, I don't cook. I'd say, right. I don't cook. The food's in the refrigerator. You know, I'm not cooking for, you know, a 15-year-old teenager. Right. And my daughter kind of was getting to be a little older. She would know how to, I wasn't, you know, so heavy into like, I had to sit down, have meals.
Right.
You know, I grew up with that, but I wasn't like that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I cooked, but mostly after that, it was just making everybody took care of themselves. And I was in my studio.
Yeah. I love that, Judith.
And I had a husband. I mean, he was a good guy. You know, he was helping. Mm-hmm. When I would go to New York for, you know, to see this or do that or whatever, he would, you know, hold down the fort.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was, you know. And then eventually I divorced from him too. And that's when the whole comeback really happened. That's when I went back to New York and had my comeback.
You had your comeback. I love that. Oh my gosh. Let's talk about your art. Thank you for sharing your incredible story. It's inspiring to say the least. Tell me where you draw inspiration for your work. What are kind of some of the major themes? You've touched on this a little bit, but let's dig a little bit deeper. Tell me about the work that you make.
Yeah. Well, I think when I started doing the symmetry and black and white work, it was around 2003, 2004. And I had gotten into this idea that I would work with rules and that rules would not be limitations, but they would actually be triggers to possibilities. And the best analogy I have for that is musical instruments, because like if you have a piano and you have 88 keys and 10 fingers, but there's no end to all the kinds of music and the different genres and the different endless. And the same with anything. You could take a drum, you could take any, but instruments are, you know, it's like no one ever thinks, well, oh, it's such a limitation that, you know, you play the trumpet.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But, I really like that idea. And that's kind of an idea that you can see it in reality, in music, but you can see it in nature. And you can see it even like in faces, which I've been working with now with heads, that 2 eyes, a nose, and a mouth mm-hmm. is what our faces are. But the millions and millions and millions of heads, they're all different.
Yeah.
So that's my, you know, my inspiration isn't any like particular thing like that I see, but I think I like those kinds of ideas of like how nature organizes itself mm-hmm. and continually produces possibilities. Mm. So I took my rules because I thought that the abstraction was freedom mm-hmm. and the symmetry was more like a discipline. Mm. And I could have freedom through discipline. So it's sort of a philosophical thing too. And that's how, you know, I like that. Mm-hmm. Got the endless possibilities and I feel completely free to keep coming up with things within them. And I'm not bound to a subject matter. You know?
I love that. I love that idea of, I think the way you worded it was not a set of rules, but a set of triggers, right?
Yeah.
And like, you know, and that just makes me think about, you know, creative rituals and routines that kind of, they're not there, like they're an on-ramp to get you in the flow, you know, they're not there to limit you. They're there to set you up for the ride, you know?
Right, exactly. And you know, if you don't have any, and most people have something, they don't always call them their rules, but otherwise you would go in the studio, you wouldn't know where to begin every day. Oh, mm-hmm. do I make things? Well, red, yellow, what do I do?
Yep.
People have ways of working. I just took mine and named them. And then I made, that's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not like just happening to be there. Like I kind of put my hands on them and said, this is it.
Let's talk about some of the work that's been in specific exhibitions that you've shared photos of with our community. So I know one is the Crazy Bitch exhibition. Uh-huh. Can you talk a little bit about some of the work that was in that exhibition and some of the concepts you were exploring?
Right, sure. So Crazy Bitch was the name of the show, and it's still within this kind of umbrella, which I call Symmetrical Procedures. That's the name of all of this kind of work. And so I just, instead of lines or patterns or whatever else, fingerprints that I'd been doing, I decided just to take text as the form. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of just shapes. Letters are really just shapes.
Right.
So I took the words Crazy Bitch, and I made a series of drawings that are all symmetrical and black and white. Black and white means every shade of gray in between. So mm-hmm. It's not strictly, you know, hard black or white.
Right.
And I made this series. And so they all say Crazy Bitch. And then the name of the show was Crazy Bitch. And Crazy Bitch for me was also a way of tying into some of my earlier work, which had been like, I was in the Bad Girls show. That was kind of like my early work in my first time around mm-hmm. had been, you know, working with photocopy and using language in sort of provocative ways. Like I had a show called Read My Pussy mm. and there were pictures of cats with labels under them that were like, you know, pussy from behind, good pussy, you know, things like that. So
right.
That was something I enjoyed doing, but I had not been doing it for a while because I was making my very kind of ethereal fingerprints and patterns and stuff. But this part of me is still alive and well, you know?
Yeah.
So that's part of what I was doing. I thought that's the way to pull them together.
I'm so proud to share that this episode is sponsored by Kindred Bravely. Kindred Bravely is a premium maternity and nursing brand that makes it easy for mothers to find functional, stylish, and comfortable clothing. Since launching in 2015, Kindred Bravely has grown into a sisterhood of moms who help each other transition from the bump to the breast and beyond. They use premium, super soft fabrics, including bamboo and organic cotton. They carry nursing-friendly dresses, tanks, and tees that are comfortable and stylish, and bump-friendly tops and bottoms, and a sleepwear line that is my personal favorite. Kindred Bravely is here for moms no matter where they are on their motherhood journey. Their mission is a comfortable bra in every nursing mother's wardrobe. So visit kindredbravely.com and use discount code AM20 to save 20% off your purchase. That's kindredbravely.com and use discount code AM20 to save 20% off. Thank you so much, Kindred Bravely, for existing in the world, for supporting mamas, and for supporting this podcast. Tell me just a little bit about maybe some of the political agenda that you've wanted to touch on, or, you know, some of the messages that you've wanted to be a part of in your work. I know that you don't take the word feminist lightly, that is an identity that you definitely proclaim. Anything you want to share about just sort of the, you know, the rights of women, or, you know, just some of the things that you're thinking about as you're making this work, as you're living your life as a, you know, an artist, mother, a feminist artist.
Right. It's hard because, you know, when you get into talking about the politics in your work, it can be a slippery slope where your work starts being like an illustration of some political point of view or some particular subject, social issue. And so I think that's where I get careful about it. So mm-hmm. I feel like there's no question, you know, that's my base. It's like I don't know. I could say that, like, even if I make a pattern that's about flowers, or it's just, you know, stripes or something, that there's subject matter behind that. But because I, like you said, it's living your life. I think it's about being feminist mm-hmm. and not believing in feminism. Mm. It's just making sure that I walk the walk in the choices I make, the decisions I make, whether it's that I don't put color in my hair, not that I'm against people if they want right. to make their hair purple or something, but, you know, color my hair to keep myself looking, you know, youthful.
Right.
Or, you know, like, that's a hard thing. Sometimes women just refuse to do that. You know, mm-hmm. they think that they're feminist, but they'll keep working on looking younger, talking mm-hmm. about looking good for their age.
Right.
Things like that. And I'm very strict about that in myself. It's like, I have no time for that.
Right.
I am exactly who I am at this age, and this is what I look like. And I don't have anything about usefulness as being better. Hmm. So whether that's in my work or not, all the time, I don't know. The new work I just did, the new paintings that I just did, have a lot of their heads mm-hmm. and they have tears. Mm. Now, I just felt like over the last few years that I just was going to make work that was expressive specifically and not just, you know, could be read as just abstract.
Right.
Like, I just needed to do that, and I hadn't been doing it for, you know, a few years now. My work hasn't really been very specific that way. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, now I'm like, there's no end to it, because mm-hmm. now with what's going on right now in the Supreme Court and the abortion, you know, I have one that's got, you know, it's a big sort of psychedelic looking head with big tears that are pink. And yeah, that's my painting that's about pink tears, and pink relates to women. And I don't know if it has to be read that way. I don't know how it could be read much otherwise, but, you know, it's a big crying head.
Yeah. I love that idea though, of just you feeling convicted to just live your life the way that you believe it should be lived, and maybe your art communicates certain things and maybe it doesn't, and not wanting to kind of talk yourself into like an art label or an art container that gets overly politicized, you know.
I don't like art that I immediately am hit over the head with the politics. I just don't. It's why I like to use humor too. Mm-hmm. Because I just have to find another way to, if I'm doing it, it's to achieve something. If I'm going to be like being about positive, I want someone to, you know, to be disarmed or to be pulled in or to find it not abrasive to be around feminists or whatever.
Right.
And so I, you know, it has to be, it's not an easy thing to do. It's like, you know, it's like anything. It's like a love story, you know. It could be a boring love story, you know, sweet and saccharine, or it could be like a dramatic, wonderful love story.
Right.
So I don't know. You know, I feel like, yeah, I've got my ideas and my messages, and I have to find that way of making it so that it carries off. Because ultimately, I want it to be visually interesting, visually, so that you know, so that the person who might hate women, feminists, can't stop looking at my painting.
Yes.
And then they'll find out, you know, oh, whatever. And they'll realize that it's okay, you know, that a strong woman or a feminist woman isn't all that bad if they can make the painting. You know, these are kind of far out things to think, but, you know.
Yeah.
You're always thinking about your audience a little bit.
Absolutely. Okay, a couple more questions before we wrap up, Judith. You so eloquently talked about that big moment of pride, where you pointed us back, you know, to your comeback and starting your career. I want you to share, if you're willing to, about a moment of failure, because I think we need to normalize failure. I don't want this podcast to, you know, exist to make other people feel bad or, Can you talk about maybe an experience of failure?
Failure is a key word. It's kind of popular even for artists to talk about it sometimes, because without failure, you really don't have that opportunity to, you know, do more, do better, do something else. But oddly, I don't know if failure is the word I would use, but disappointments, letdowns, you know, low times. You know, I can be very, very disappointed about, you know, not being included in something, not being mentioned. You're in a show and the write-up talks about XYZ and you just looked over. Just, you know, being at things and not being considered, you know, to feel kind of like an outsider. I've had that experience a lot where, you know, you're at things where people are just, they know each other and they're all like kind of more successful and everything. And although I like to be around people that are sort of further down the line than me, but it is an intimidating environment sometimes. And I've been at you know, in early stages, so many times where I'm at something, I have nobody to talk to. And I have to like, I'll like cross the room, like act like I'm walking, you know, I act like I'm going to the other side of the room just to see my friend. And I really have no one there. So pathetic.
Yep. But, I've done that before. Definitely.
That's what I would consider. I don't know if it's failure, but just feeling really vulnerable and, not part of things and not, you know, sort of not successful, you know, not feeling, you know, seen or recognized is very, very hard. It's not an easy thing being an artist that way, you know, because you never know. You could feel that way one night and the next day you go out and nobody knows you and nobody remembers meeting you or whatever.
Absolutely. So I feel like a good follow-up question is just to ask you to describe your definition of success. Like what is your vision of having a successful art career and a successful life?
You know, I think it would be successful if I could reach the point where I'm at peace with like my efforts and my accomplishments. And not be feeling anxious that I didn't get something. I didn't get more. I'm still not there. Still have a lot, you know, I'm very goal oriented and I want more, you know. I just do.
Yep.
But I don't want to die feeling that way.
Yeah.
And I'm 74. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying, you know, to see everything as like, you know, I say I'm trying. I don't know what I mean when I say I'm trying. You know, I would like to feel that everything is sort of, wow, I got that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like as if, you know, as if I could be just okay, just where I am. And then anything after that would be like extras, like mm-hmm. that I would get. That would be successful if I could reach that point of, you know, where I felt at peace with what I've accomplished.
Mm. I certainly hope you get to that point because you do a lot and you've done a lot. And I know I'm impressed. So thank you, Judith.
Well, thank you very much for talking.
Okay, let's close with our final five questions. This went so quick.
Oh, okay,
I feel like I have.
Okay.
You know, we could talk for hours, but at least we'll get to meet in person at the end of June and we can really see each other across the room and be like, I got to go talk to this person. I know this person.
Thank God. I feel most of the time those days are over.
Yes. Well, and at Artist Mother events, it's everybody's a big family. Yeah. So there's none. You know, there's really none of that. Everyone is always so generous and I hope nobody ever feels the way that you felt at, you know, an Artist Mother related event.
At an Artist Mother event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So final five, who's your biggest art crush?
Oh, like somebody I just love.
Yeah.
You know who I love and lately I've been thinking about her a lot? Laurie Anderson.
Mm.
She's very, I just listened to a wonderful interview with her. And also I saw her work recently at the Mass MoCA. And they have a whole room for her where she has the videos up. She's my age too. Mm-hmm. The interview, she's 74. I was like, oh my God. She's just full of, you know, inner spirit mm-hmm. and inner conviction and humility. And she's just a creative genius on top of it, you know. Mm. I love everything about her.
I love that. Okay. Favorite place to travel or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
Oh, gee, that's a hard one. I only travel for my shows. And fortunately, I have gotten to travel mm-hmm. over the last 20 years. I've been to a lot of places for art shows.
Amazing.
So anywhere anybody wants to do an art show and they invite me. That's my favorite place to go.
Okay. Well, out of the places you've been for your art, what has been a favorite?
Oh, you're kind of pinning me down because I, you know, I had so much fun in Brussels and Vienna
nice.
Because of other artists. And whenever there's a show like something and you're meeting up like that with artists from all over, there's always a night where you can go dancing.
Yes.
I don't do here all the time, you know? So it's like you're out in a place. So yeah, dancing with artists in anywhere in the world.
I love
and
that.
I did that in Brussels and in Vienna.
Okay, tell me a book or a film that has been a big inspiration to you.
Hmm. Okay. So film-wise, there's a film called Stranger Than Paradise. Jim Jarmusch. It had a big effect on me. It was probably 35 years ago.
Okay.
But it was the first minimal real time type film I saw where everything was very still and nothing, little things mattered.
Mm.
Like vacuuming the mm-hmm. rug, smoking the cigarette, just real time smoking the cigarette. I loved it. So I love that kind of thing. You know, it's just very raw, very little things matter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm into with my artwork.
Yeah.
You know,
I love
very
that.
Very little thing.
Oh, great answer.
I have to just say, though, that my favorite book of all time is Crime and Punishment.
Nice.
Which I also think is still with me because it's the duality, the symmetry, the two sides of the coin.
Okay. Favorite meal?
Favorite meal. Well, you know, I'm not much of a foodie. You know, I'm just a health food hippie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give me some good you know, fresh vegetables and, you know, I'm happy.
That's it. Awesome.
You know, I like French fries.
Yeah.
French fries.
Okay, Judith. And I always like to offer a space for you to give a shout out to somebody who supports you and your work that you just want to share a thank you to.
Oh, gee. Okay. I told the story of how I had my comeback was by, I went over and this one gallery didn't know me and took faith in me.
Yep.
So Rodrigo Malia Lira, that's his name. And he's now, he and his wife and his family, they live in Stockholm where they're originally from, but yeah.
Because
he just looked at the work, no idea who I was.
Amazing.
And got it.
Amazing. I actually have one more question I wanted to ask you before the final five and I forgot. What's it like to be an artist grandmother? You have some images of your kiddos, your grandkids.
Grandparenting, believe me, it makes all of the hardship of parenting worth it. You know, I love my daughter, you know, like the way you love your kids, you love your kids. Yep. No. The grandchildren you love in a whole other type of way. Your kids already, they drove you crazy. And they, you know, they don't like you that much anymore.
Yep.
It's not like there's this perfect thing with your kids for your whole life or anything. But your grandchildren adore you and you adore them, period. That's it. Forever.
Do they like your art?
Yes. And the little girl, I have twin grandchildren, boy and a girl, and the little girl, Echo, she does identify as an artist.
Oh, awesome.
She just loves to draw. If she's having, we're doing something and she'll say, oh, excuse me, I have to go and draw. So she's got to go draw whatever we were just doing, you know, having pizza or something like that. She's got to go over and draw people at a table with a pizza, you know.
Oh, wow.
So she's working out everything she's thinking. She draws a picture of. But anyway, drawing doesn't mean she's going to be an artist.
Yeah,
And the little boy is a, you know, a big reader and very good with language and words. And so maybe he'll be an artist as a writer, you know.
Maybe.
But anyway, having grandchildren is heaven.
I love it, Judith. Okay, last question. Where can folks find more about you and your work? What's your website and Instagram?
Okay, so judithannbraun.com is my website.
Anne without an E.
Without an E, just Judith Ann Braun. And on Instagram and Facebook, I think if you just put in Judith Ann Braun, or even if you put in just Judith Braun, I'm pretty sure I come up.
Let me see it real quick. Judith Ann Braun. Yep.
Right.
A-N-N.
And on my website includes my videos, because I consider video a little arm of my work. I haven't been doing it like the last couple of years, but they're on my website, but they're also on YouTube and Vimeo. So if you put my name into those, you'll find a bunch of videos that I consider my artwork also.
Awesome. Judith, thank you so much. Thank you for jurying. Thank you for being such a generous artist, for wanting to dive right in and be a part of this community. And I can't wait to meet you next month. But mostly thank you for sharing vulnerably about your work and your story. It was incredibly inspiring. Really appreciate you.
Thank you. And yeah, I hope there's some mother out there that got some mother artist. I mean,
oh, there's thousands. There's thousands.
They got some little tidbits for themselves.
Thanks, Judith. The Artist Mother Podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.